I am Platt on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. There's a wonderful new memoir out that's a great history of one man's life in Vancouver's Chinatown and beyond. Edwin Lee was born in Vancouver in July 1936. His family was instrumental in the development of Vancouver's Chinatown going back to the gold rush in the latter part of the 19th century. Mr. Lee, who joins me now, has written a book, Some Young Guys, and has told his story, his family's, his friends, and those around him. It's a life that's been prosperous, fun, and fulfilling, but it's a life that's not been without its tragedies, heartbreak, and tensions, be they social or otherwise. Edwin Lee took on this book project as a way of telling his kids and grandkids about his life and their past, but what he's done is given the reader a great view onto what life was like in this city from the late 1930s onwards. He lovingly and meticulously recreates a simpler time, and offers, and throughout, offers lessons he's learned through his life, his own life, lessons that are worth heeding for a more fulfilling, more enjoyable life. There's a lot of wisdom here, not just from Edwin, but from the generations before him. His background is Chinese-Canadian, but it is a story that's quintessentially Canadian. People can buy the book by visiting Edwin's website, edwinlee.shawwebspace.ca. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Please welcome to the Platt on the Line program in studio, as it were, Edwin Lee. Mr. Lee, good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
Thanks for coming in to do this. It's a pleasure meeting you.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So, Gary Lee is a friend of yours. I know Gary through Facebook. I've actually never met him, but he was the one who mentioned the book on Facebook. He gets around a lot, that guy.
Yeah, he does.
And so he posted photos of your book launch. I guess that was in late May.
Yes.
Yeah, and so the book's been out since then, and I called you, I guess, right after or right before, and you very kindly sent me a copy of the book. It was very difficult to put down, and it seems to me, in reading it, that it was a project that you had to do. Like, and I'm wondering what compelled you to take up writing about your life, about your family's history.
Well, you know, in the last few years, of my buddies, I call them my buddies from Chinatown, two have passed away, and unfortunately, they knew I was going to do this for them. And, you know, I felt that we had a lot to say about our life, and it'd be valuable for other people to hear about it. And so, before I lose my memory and more friends, I thought it's the time to do it, and I think it'd be valuable for my kids, my mm-hmm. grandchildren.
Yeah. So you were born in Vancouver, is that right?
Yes.
But your parents had spent some time in Winnipeg, didn't they?
Well, my mother was married in a marriage that was by a marriage maker for uh-huh. my grandmother. So she got married and lived in Winnipeg with my father's parents. So they stayed there together until my sister became about 6 years old, and then they moved to Vancouver. So I think it was more like 3 years.
That's your older sister.
My older sister was born in Winnipeg.
I see. Yeah. And then you're the second oldest?
I'm the second. Well, actually, I have a stepbrother.
Oh, okay.
A half-brother.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the other thing that I noticed in the book, is that you came from a family that was quite large. I mean, five kids today seems like a large family. Four kids, I should say. Yeah. But you came from a family where your grandparents had, your grandfather had multiple families.
Yeah, he actually lived with two wives at the same time. He wasn't married to the third wife. My grandmother was the second.
I see.
So she came over as a nanny to help my grandmother, and then my grandfather found a liking to her and then took her into his concubine and started another family.
What was that? How was that viewed by, say, Vancouver society at the time? In the book, you quote an excerpt where it's written about in a newspaper. What kind of newspaper? It wasn't a very friendly newspaper.
It was a bisector. It's called the bisector, yeah.
It was weren't they a little right wing or more
yes,
severe than that?
They were. Yeah. They were. Definitely were. It wasn't, you know, it was frowned upon by by Canadians, obviously, but I think it was sort of accepted in China. So they came here and did the same thing, and it wasn't frowned upon.
Yeah.
You know, people didn't really make a big thing out of it.
I see, And so the other thing that you do in this book that's just wonderful, like I've never met you, but you get to know your family through this book and your friends. And you lay it all out, not all of it, but you do lay out what happened to them, where they ended up, even some of them. Where does that come from, that sort of writing down of history? Is that from your Uncle John?
Part of it is from my Uncle John, but a lot of it is because I was associating with all of them at the right age to gather all this information and to know them. And I was at all my mother's siblings' funerals. So I knew them intimately.
And so in your family, are you the guy that has the family trees and all that and knows where everyone is?
My Uncle John started the family tree, and that's the one thing that I wish I would have done is put the family tree in the book. It's quite big.
Yeah.
And I hope that maybe in the next press that we would get this so everybody would understand the family connection.
And so do you guys have family reunions and the sort today?
We used to have large family reunions. Went for quite a few years, and it happened every 5 years. Now there's only a segment of the family continuing on because we're close to one another.
Yeah.
But to get a whole family reunion, it's still possible, but we haven't tried again.
And so what has the reaction been from your kids, from your grandkids, about writing a book like this?
Well, I think from my grandkids, they're astounded to see. They don't know much about my background. You see, my children, or my wife's children from her first marriage, are my children now.
Yeah.
And I never had children of my own, so they didn't know about a lot of mine. In fact, they called me the hired chef. I used to go over when I met my wife, their mother. I used to go over there and bring my wok and just cook dinner for them. So they called me the hired chef. So I never had children, but I sure value them as my own now.
Yeah, and it's a great legacy to be able to share your story, not only with them, but readers like myself say.
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, the one thing that we do share is the city,
that's right.
And so that's literally in this book, is the history of the city, as you saw it.
Yeah. But I learned a lot from going to Kinget High School, where I watch all my Caucasian friends, you know, the hugging of one another. I've never had that bringing up where my parents saying the word love, and I think. After becoming an adult, I've learned to come out of my shyness and actually hug people because I really wanted to, and I missed that in the early part of my life.
Yeah, what was the relationship like between you and your siblings growing up? Because you were born here, was that a little bit different, say, than your parents when they were growing up?
Well, my mother, being the oldest, she was like not only a sister, but she was like a mother looking after her siblings. I believe there was a lot of love and respect to my mother. And yet, the unfortunate part is when my grandfather died, the old Chinese custom is that you don't leave anything to the daughter. And my mother looked after my grandfather for 7 years when he was sick. So her sisters thought that because she was left out and her brothers were left with quite a fortune, that they should have shared it with her. And unfortunately, they went to court. Which is a terrible thing to happen in a family, you know. But that's what happens. I think sometimes when there's too much wealth, they just can't see beyond that to share it like they should.
Yeah. And the relationship between your mother and your father, what was that like?
Well, I think there's a lot of complacency. My father worked 16 hours a day at the restaurant. Mother looked after us. They didn't have a normal relationship. I think my mother just, she was a good wife, a good mother, and did what she thought was best for the family, never thinking about herself. You know, my mother never even bought clothes for herself. She fended for her children first.
Yeah.
So, and I've heard so many people talk about my mother who was so giving and caregiving to other people, not just to her own family. So I heard this after the book came out, and people come up to me and they talk to me about that.
Yeah.
So I didn't see all of that.
That must be terrific, though, isn't it, to find out aspects of your life post facto, you know?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. And you alluded to earlier that you didn't have sort of the physical affection from your parents that you would have wanted to, or that's common nowadays.
Yeah.
Between each other, yeah. I guess you never really saw much affection physically, no. Right?
None at all. Yeah. None at all.
Yeah. When you look back at growing up in Vancouver's Chinatown, as you did in this book, it's changed a great deal. I mean, you go down there today, you know, they're knocking down buildings and replacing them with taller ones and the sort. But there's still stuff that's the same, and I'm wondering what you think that might be.
Well, I think it's there's a lot of things that are outstanding buildings, and what it means that it's good to have some of the old heritage involved with the new. I think that's a nice blend, you know. At least, you know, there's a story behind all that, you know. Something new doesn't have a story. It'll take years from now before that gets to that point. But I think there's a lot of families can relate to a lot of the buildings, the people in it, and it brings back memories.
Yeah,
I think they're invaluable.
And when you go back there today, do you find that there's a lot that's familiar? I mean, it probably evokes a lot of memories for you when you're walking down, say, Pender Street or something like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I look back at behind the old Marco Polo and where the old Chinese Opera Theater, all that was False Creek water, going quite a ways. In fact, I was told that it used to go all the way to Clark Drive, water.
Yeah.
So that all that landfill and creation of new territories, and you know, it's unbelievable. There's a lot of things that reminds me of, and I can still visualize those hobos with their sticks and cooking some meals, leftovers from the restaurant garbage can.
Yeah,
there's a lot of things that still reminds me of the old Chinatown.
Now, your great grandfather,
whose
picture is prominent at the back of the book, he was the first of your family that came here. Is that right?
Yes, he is.
And when that would have been in the late 19th century?
He was 19 when he came here, so it was somewhere in the 1980s.
1880s.
1880s. Yeah. That's right.
And how did he come here? Was he did he work as a laborer or?
He came over with Mr. Lim, who has no association, and he came as a Joe boy, a chore boy. So he came over, and then he was a janitor in the store, and that's how he started. And then he learned English, working a separate job with a Caucasian family, just so he can get to learn how to speak English. And eventually, the former owner, Mr. Lim, moved back to Hong Kong. And grandfather managed the store for him until he decided my family's too important to me, so he stayed back in Hong Kong. And my great-grandfather did the books, so he knew that the company was doing well. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, I think maybe we should make an offer to buy this. Perhaps he doesn't want to come back. So that's how it got started.
And then what sort of business was your great-grandfather, your grandfather, and you guys had a building at 75 East Pender, right?
Yeah, I think it originally, back in the early days, more of a tent operation, and then an old frame building, wooden frame. And then as the business grew, they decided to build this new building in 1908. It was completed in 1908. And in those days, the building was the house of the employees. as well as
the business.
The business, which is import and export. So they ship things to Hong Kong, they ship things to San Francisco, Portland along the coast. So it bought a lot of things like salted fish. Directly from China.
The other thing that you do that I think is just absolutely charming and it's wonderful in this book is you talk about some of the people. Now, you mean you talk about your friends and your family, of course, but you talk about the people that work for the family in the business, and you remember them so lovingly, and it's just wonderful that you remember them, because most of these people, they came here and they didn't really have any families. All they had was their work.
We were their children.
Yeah.
We were their children.
Yeah, and so that was important for you to do, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You know, they were so good to us, too. And you know, they had to have somebody to give some their love in an indirect way.
Yeah.
And they wanted to teach us what are the good things to do.
Yeah.
And I think they gained a lot of respect from my grandfather, who took over the business after my grandfather. Yeah.
And when he died, that was in the 50s.
Yes.
It was one of the biggest funerals in the city's history, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Do you remember where you were that day? I mean, you were part of it probably, right?
Well, I was still living in Chinatown.
Yeah.
And I think we all went in about 6 limousines, one for each family. My grandmother and wife number 3 never went because in the old days they were taken care of at home by their close friends. They never went to see the final resting place. So we were at Armstrong on Dunleavy and Hastings, and we were in a slow march with the Vancouver policeman and the number 1 fire hall. They marched all the way down the main, turning left, going down to Penner Street, one block over, and march all the way down to my grandfather's store, receive a big, huge wreath from the employees.
Yeah.
And then another block and a half to the Limb Association. And that's where they presented another wreath. And then less than 2 blocks away, the band left, and the 300 cars headed towards the cemetery.
There were thousands of people there that day, right?
Well, all I can remember is people lining up both sides of Penner Street when we were walking. And, of course, you know, you're only thinking about your grandfather. You weren't thinking of people, but it seemed like you were crowded in on both sides of the car.
Yeah. There are 4 guys on the cover here. These are you. This is you and your friends.
Yes.
And so, as I've mentioned already in the course of the book, you talk about friendship and these guys that you grew up with. Mm-hmm. Some of them are still with us. Some of them have died. There's a lesson in here about friendship, and I'm curious to know what you look for in a friend.
Well, I look on a friend as a person who doesn't necessarily always have to be with you for 24 hours. You could be away for 6 months or a month. Next thing you know, you call them or they call you and they're asking how you are doing, how your family's doing. And there's some concern and a bond that is there forever. And I think that's the way it is. I just came from a lunch with 4 or 5 of my friends, and they've been doing this for years. I just started myself because I've been busy. And every one of these people, there's different groups in Vancouver now, different age groups. They're all getting together on a weekend, having coffee, having tea, talking about old times. And they know that, you know, these are invaluable times. And a lot of them are talking about their grandkids.
Yeah. And you talk in the book about a trip that you took, a bunch of you, to China. And is that something that you'd suggest to people, to travel with your friends in a group like that?
Well, you know, this has never happened before, and there was about 4 or 5 of us of the group that went. We didn't get everybody of the group that I grew up with. But you might say we were a little closer to one another than the others. Not that we weren't, still remained friends. And I think it was a thing of rebonding again, because we don't see everybody as often as we used to, but... You know, it's nice to have our wives with us and have the wives bond together. And everyone just, you know, they remember this forever for this trip. It was a wonderful trip.
Yeah, and unfortunately after that, some of the folks
Two of them
died.
That passed, yeah. Who passed on.
But you have those memories, and
oh, yes.
They're in this book as well.
Yeah.
In terms of your growing up in Vancouver's Chinatown, do you miss the most? I mean, it seems like it's a simpler time, but I mean, I'm sure there were problems, but do you think it was a simpler time? I mean, compared to today, or
it was simpler. You know, you don't. What I guess I missed the most is the flow of people, the activity, the people saying, Joe-san, how are you? Seeing a wagon pulling down a dead pig and still had blood in it, followed by flies, mm-hmm. going to a store and to be sold off in pieces. There was a lot of activity in those days. You know, people displaying outside their store in boxes, vegetables, everything that just everyone shopped every day. You know, we didn't shop for the week. We shopped every day to have food.
Yeah. And everyone seemed to know each other.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Even competitors got along very well.
Yeah, you don't see that nowadays.
No, you don't.
Another constant in the book, and we mentioned this before we started, was this shop on Main Street. I guess it's not Pender.
Open Market?
No, it's the Italian shop.
Oh yes, the Italian shop.
Yeah, and I've stood at that bus stop for years and looked
it's
across.
On Kiefer and Main.
Yeah, looked across the street, and that shop looks pretty much what it looked like, say
exactly
when you were growing up, right?
Yeah.
And it's the same family, is it?
Same family. It's the son. This young man is 2-3 years older than I am. And when I saw him first, as I came home from school, he had black curly locks, Italian. And when I went in to visit him in 2012, he said, "That was me." I said, "You know, and your store was huge." And I said, "I just had to look in through the window and see the activity, because you had a lot of Italian people shopping there, because obviously you attracted the best customers in town."
Yeah.
So,
and people still buy pasta and cheese. And
oh,
sort
they
of
sure do. Yeah. You know, I mean, he cuts slices of cheese for me, and he said, "Taste this, try this, try some of this pasta." But I think he was so healthy looking, and the reason he says, "You know what, non-carcinogenic is the type of food you should be eating." You know, almonds. And that's what kept him healthy. So I said, "Well, you know what, everyone else is starting to do that."
Yeah. He was ahead of his time, wasn't he?
He sure was.
Yeah. What have your friends thought of the book? Because they're mentioned a lot in the book. You have their stories there to a certain extent. Did they think it's fun to be mentioned in a book like this?
I just think that they felt proud that they were mentioned. And you know, they were mentioned a lot due to the fact that I interviewed a lot of them and got their stories. Because, like a lot of us, after we got married, after school, well, we had family to look after, and we didn't know what the others were doing and whether they changed jobs. This way, every one of us know what happened to their past and brought us a little closer to understanding one another.
Yeah.
And, no, there's a friendship that's unusually, you don't see with a lot of people. You know, even in my King Ed High School reunion, we have a reunion every summer for barbecue, and there's 40 or 45 of us from the class of 55.
Hmm.
And we go up there, and we tell them where we came from, where we were originally born, what's happened to our life. And that's opened a new book for all of us to learn about one another. You know, I really feel that in life, we're all brothers and sisters.
And speaking of King Ed, class of 55, you went to school with Bobby Ackles and Red Robinson, right?
Red Robinson is one of my class, yes.
Yeah. And so you guys, Ackles, unfortunately, is no longer with us, but Robinson, you guys keep in touch and all that, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Where was King Ed High?
12th and Oak.
And so that's been
part of the hospital now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so did you live near there or?
No, I lived in Chinatown.
And so you would commute every day?
I would commute every day. I walked from Chinatown up to Victory Square to catch a two-way streetcar. And it ran all the way across Canby Street Bridge, along Broadway, and then that's how I went to school.
Yeah. When you came in here, I told you that I looked at your ring.
Yeah.
On your left hand. It's jade, right?
Yes.
And if you read the book and you start the book from the beginning, and it's such a beautiful remembrance of your sister Evelyn, who passed away in an airline crash. She was a stewardess.
That's right.
That's her ring, right?
That's her ring. Yeah. It's huge for a lady.
Yeah.
In a small setting.
Yeah.
But, you know.
And that's been with you since she died.
Since she died.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you tell us about Evelyn? Because she's a small part in the book, but it's because she had a short life. But she's there throughout.
Yes.
And I asked you where you lived when you went to King Ed, because there was a time when you were separated from your parents. You and your brother were living with an aunt and uncle elsewhere.
That's right.
But it was her death that brought all of you together to live,
yeah,
I guess, for the first time in one house, right?
Yeah, well, unfortunately through her death, it was always her intention for us to save enough money to live in a house together, which we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, through her death, her insurance company, her insurance policy enabled my mom and dad for us to buy a house and move out of my grandmother's place down in Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the influence away from Chinatown was good and bad. You know, there's great memories, but it changed our lifestyle a little bit. And living, like I said, it's better having spiders and cockroaches in your house.
There's a funny scene in the book where you're with your grandmother, yeah, and there's a rat.
Yes.
What did she do with the rat?
My grandmother killed it with an axe.
Just one shot, right?
One shot.
Yeah, that's just...
You know, I don't know if it was 10 inches, but, you know, as a six-year-old, that rat looked pretty big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so people, like me, look at the ring all the time when they see you, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they can get the whole story in the book.
Yes.
To get philosophical for just a sec,
mm-hmm,
because you obviously have a way that you view life. Perhaps you came to that yourself through circumstances in your life, but I think it goes back through the generations from what your parents taught you, from what your grandparents taught you, from your friends taught, what they imparted wisdom, if you will, upon you and the people around you. What do you understand about life that is perhaps useful for other people listening to us?
Well, I think that there's a lot of wisdom from your parents and from your grandparents that we didn't take it seriously. And I think that if we took a little bit of that grain of salt, we would probably have an easier retirement. Not that we didn't do well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think looking at how long an hour your folks worked and for how little, I think it taught us a lesson of working hard and not taking it easy ever. And life isn't always easy, and it wasn't for our parents. So it gave us a lot of encouragement to better ourselves, even though we were a minority race and we were given a bad time. My sister was actually one of the first Chinese to be hired,
mm-hmm,
from CP Airline. So times did change, and I think do change, and eventually improve better.
And then the one thing that I learned from this book that's very important, and I'm sure you think that this is vitally important too in one's life, is the process of remembering. And we need to remember the past, because if we don't, it's gone. And if you hadn't written this book, your kids, your grandkids wouldn't have anything,
mm-hmm,
to remember.
Yeah. I think already talking to people who have purchased the book, they said it sure reminded them, and they knew everybody in the book, and it enriched their lives, and to remember what they've forgotten happened to them in the past. So I think it's a value to a lot of people, and I think that it's good to remember where we came from,
yeah,
how we came about,
Do you encourage other people to take the time and effort that you have in terms of writing down your story? I mean, it seems like it was a lot of hard work, and it was, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It wasn't for my wife. I don't think we could have gotten the book finished and as well as it did. Marcia is my wife.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people I've spoken to, and they've got a lot of stories to tell, but I don't think they could see that they can handle and put it together.
Mm-hmm.
I think because I've always been after to improve myself, I took the challenge and tried to do my best. And I think, you know, there's a lot of courses today that can help you bring your story together. And sure, it needs some help and needs some studying, but I'm sure all of us have a lot to tell, and there's ways of putting it together, and there's a lot of help around.
Do you wish you did it sooner?
I don't think I would have had as comprehensive a story as I have now if I did it sooner. I'm 78 now. I probably arrived at the stage of my life where, you know, I've been watercoloring for a few years now and found other things other than just golfing. But I thought this became a time to take a little bit of history and bring it forward.
Yeah. And one of your mother's sisters is still alive.
Yes, right. She's the last and youngest sibling.
So, yeah. But you didn't really, as you say in the book, you didn't test her memory that much.
No, she's actually got to a point where she was familiar with my face. I don't think she knows her children by their names now. And she's, you know, it's like a lot of people, she's 90, 91. Uh-huh. So Alzheimer's has affected her.
Yeah. So it's one of those things that if people are listening to us that are thinking about putting stuff down for history, they really ought to do it, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's a wonderful, you mentioned your wife, Marcia, and there's a wonderful story in the book. Yeah. I got chills reading it. I was reading it at about 2 in the morning, and I was reading it in bed, and I had to sit bolt up because it was just, you were a paper boy growing up.
Yes.
And I guess she never met her grandparents.
No.
And her grandfather in particular.
Yeah.
And then she finds out later that he lived in the building that you delivered.
Exactly.
So he could have been one of your customers, right?
He could have been one of my customers.
That's one of those amazing things in this book. There's a couple of them in the book where you just you know, it's life. It's that, you know, it's the thread. It's
Well, Joe, there's such a love story involved. Her grandmother died at age 38, giving birth to the ninth child, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided to become a recluse. So he moved from Montreal to Vancouver. And nothing much was from the family was heard from him, even his own kids.
Yeah.
They didn't know where he was. So we've been searching for 20, 25 years, looking for her father. And then finding information her grandfather. It's another amazing story about their family. It's just her father happened to have one of the movie actresses as his mistress.
Really?
Yeah. She sat behind the box at Santa Anita with Lou and Abbott Costello.
Really?
She even babysat for Cornell Wilde.
Wow.
So they're. I'm trying to get my wife to do this, but I don't know.
So what's next for you? What I mean, it seems like you'd think at 78 you put down your life story, your family's life story, but I don't think this is over for you, is it? You're still putting things together, aren't you?
Well, I'm still putting things together, and the meeting Jim Wong Chu, he's head of the Asian Canadian Writers Workshop. Been very supportive. People like Beverly Nan, the Asian Explorations,
mm-hmm.
and Julia Kwan, she's a writer director for Firehorse Production, wanted to interview me. He said, "There's a lot more stories in you. I think you should do a follow up." And I said, "Well, I have some more information, but you know, it all depends whether my wife would allow me the time to do that, because it's very time consuming, not just for me but for her time as well, and you got to value that. And I think it's two people have to agree to do something like this big.
Yeah. But you guys have done such a great job with this book, and I hope a lot of people pick it up because it's such a delightful read. And as I've said already, it's Edwin's history, but it's also a history of Vancouver's Chinatown that if he hadn't written this book, we probably would never have known. Just the delightful stories, the tragic stories as well. But it's a part of our history. So congratulations on writing this. And people can buy the book from your webpage, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, edwinlee.shawwebspace.ca. Edwin, it's been such a pleasure meeting you. Thanks for coming in to do this.
Thank you for inviting me, Joe.
You're very welcome.
Yeah.
Edwinlee.shaw.webspace.ca. That's the website where you can get Some Young Guys. You got to pick it up because it's just a delightful read. If you'll read it like I did, you'll just have such a lot of fun reading it. It's author Edwin Lee. Joined me in studio here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunton.